Catherine Cottle, welcome to The Signal. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This story, it begins with this box full of correspondence from your great-grandparents, love letters to each other. Let me ask you to give us the context of these old letters, when they were written, and the two young people, young at the time, who penned these letters to each other.
Well, these were love letters that were written by my great-grandparents, at the time, girlfriend, boyfriend, and kind of secret fiancés, between the years of 1900 and 1903. And they were hidden and not found until the deaths of my great-grandparents about 60 years later. Relatives found them in the latter part of the 20th century. So we were lucky enough in the 70s, a relative typed up transcripts that were then mailed to several families related to my great-grandparents. So I knew about the letters really for the past, you know, two decades. They've been sitting in my mother's chest waiting for me to do something with them. They've been calling my name for quite a while. But I knew I needed to get to a point in my life, I think, where I had handled and processed, you know, lots of major life challenges and tragedies in order to really address them in the way that I wanted to.
What a temptation it must have been, I imagine, at times to sort of, you know, open them all at once like Christmas morning and, and delve into them. But and what an act of self-restraint, I guess, to and discipline to wait until you were ready to kind of absorb them. I mean, you're an accomplished writer at this point. You've published several books. You're a mom. You're at a certain point in your life where you decided, yes, it's time to crack open this box of old letters, transcripts. What was it like? What was it like to finally open that first letter and read it?
I think I knew that it was going to be a project that took baby steps. And I read the letters in a similar method, taking baby steps, and then spending a good 2.5 years, which is the same amount of time that the letters span, working on my own creative response to them. So it definitely was not something that I thought would be finished in one day.
You mentioned your own creative response to these letters, and it's a huge part of what this book is all about. I want to get into that in just a few minutes. But first, do us the favor, if you would, of just reading us a couple representative samples of these two young sweethearts' letters to each other. Your great-grandparents, the great-grandpa was Peter Sundwall Jr.,
correct,
and great-grandma was Eleanor Brady Sundwall, who Peter refers to as Nellie.
Correct.
Okay, so maybe we can hear from a letter from Peter first?
Sure. I'll start with an early letter that was written July 26, 1900. This is postmarked from Philadelphia. Peter has recently been called to serve a Mormon mission, which is another part of the interesting aspects of the book, because we don't normally think of any type of missionary having a long-term intimate relationship while they're on that mission. But as you can tell from reading the book, he's not exactly your normal everyday missionary. So I wanted to read a section. He has just arrived in Philadelphia after a short visit to New York before he's going to embark on a mission which will he'll take by boat to eventually Sweden. His parents were from Sweden, so it's a little bit of a return on his end as well. Dear Nellie, we have now been in town some 3 or 4 hours, coming from New York. We arrived in New York yesterday at 4 p.m., and from what little I have seen of the town, I do not like the place much. We may not have been in the pleasantest part of town, and so this may account for my opinion of the town. The streets are so narrow and paved with hard brick-shaped rock, and the elevated cars and the ground track cars, together with the continual rattling of wagons and the tromp of horses' hoofs, make so much noise that it tires one. With all this noise, you can scarcely speak audibly. Cars can scarcely make their way through the jam of vehicles, and drivers occasionally have a set to as a result of the collision. I saw a case of this yesterday, wherein one driver was about to scrap another. I picked that one because we can see a lot of parallels with life today.
Yeah, not an uncommon reaction for people who from rural areas when they go to New York for the first time.
Correct. And I kind of like the set to and scrap as ways of describing a confrontation.
A gentlemanly way of talking about road rage, I guess, even in the year 1900. Yeah. So that's your great-grandfather, Peter, writing to his sweetheart, who would eventually become your great-grandmother, Eleanor, Nellie.
Mm-hmm.
And now maybe we can hear a letter from Nellie back to Peter.
Sure. One thing that Peter does is constantly describe the setting and the people around him as he goes from country to country and city to city. Nellie has not been as fortunate in terms of being well-traveled. She's not as educated. Her letters tend to be more, I've been working all day, I'm exhausted, and I barely had time to write you this letter. Where Peter, as you can tell from the book, parallels with my own life in really aiming and desiring a life of the mind in which he can reflect on what he sees around him and incorporate that into not only his thoughts, but his language. He also is a very talented artist and is often sending sketches back to Nellie of the beautiful Swedish maidens. So I wanted to read a section where she's responding to that. This letter is dated January 27th, 1901, from Robinson, Utah. This is addressed to my own dear Peter. Nellie also does not have a consistent family situation, so she is often moving around from different residential situations in order to have work to survive. I cannot imagine myself how it would be to see the people and country where you are. I only know that I would enjoy it very much. How grand it would be to be there where you are, to be with you. How I wish that I could come, but I cannot. So I won't think of it. It grieves me. Yet I am glad you are there. Don't wish I were there now. I just need a rosy hue in my cheeks. Hope you have not inferred from my letters that I thought you were infatuated with the Swedish maidens. Do not blame you if you did. Judging from the sketch, they must be beautiful. The sketch is fine. The snapshot is also. There are a few Swedish people here. I have showed this picture to them. It seems to delight them very much. Reminds them of days that have passed.
So much subtext in these letters once you really get into them. You know, you mentioned at one point, you know, that we look at these old-timey pictures of people and we think of life as literally so black and white and so much simpler. But once you get beyond that sort of polite textual inflections, you realize
yes.
There's some complicated emotions going on there. Again, that's Catherine Cottle reading a letter from her great-grandmother, Nellie, to her great-grandfather, Peter, in 1901, when they were both young Mormon sweethearts carrying on a long-distance relationship via correspondence, when Peter was overseas completing his mission work. These letters, as you say, they span 2.5 years. They've been preserved in this book, I Remain Yours. But I have to say, an essential part of this book, Catherine, and what really does make it a creative endeavor, is your own correspondence that you begin with these departed ancestors. Tell me about this moment when you got inspired to write your first letter to these, you know, long-gone great-grandparents.
I have to say, I knew I wasn't going to enter into the family tree in the usual way. with my writing, I really try to write what isn't being written, to tackle things in ways that I haven't seen presented before. And so when I wanted to take a look at their correspondence, I really found I had to kind of take that family tree and turn it upside down and shake it a little bit and see where I was going to enter into the conversation. And I felt like my story really was part of their story, which in turn will hopefully one day be part of somebody else's story. And so that was the turning point when I realized I was writing as much for an audience or perhaps children I will never meet in my lifetime as I was for my current audience.
I wonder if you might go ahead and read an example of one of your letters to your grandparents.
Sure. This one is dated Baltimore, Maryland, July 20th, 2009. Dear Nellie, when I look at the black and white photos of your time, it makes me mistakenly think that life was less complicated. The lack of color in the prints takes away the intensity of both pain and pleasure. No hot reds or oranges. No weeping blues or rotting yellows. The black and white presentation shows pause, strength, unmoving, so distanced from my living three-dimensional Blu-ray high-def world. The unfocused quality of the black and white prints suggests you couldn't feel the same pinch from the sun or the same flinch from a deep cut, which is obviously not true. Yet the difference, the lack of realistic representation that we are so accustomed to today, creates that false reaction. The pictures of you are dulled, and it is easy to imagine your life in that same lack of definition, time stopped and paused in some other dimension. You will remain forever on another continent, one that cannot be reached by any mode of current transportation, a land not quite real, with carriages pulled by horses and lamplight as the only glowing interruption in your night. I wonder if my life will seem as intangible to my great-grandchildren in the year 2120. In another 110 years, will my words describe a world that my great-granddaughter will only understand in theory? Will our cars look like crude plastic play toys? Our JCPenney portraits capturing propped comedies of families in unexplained matching outfits? Will she be able to step back into my shoes? Or will she see my life as a distant closet, forgotten and full of old and unwanted things? Maybe she will see something that will remind her of herself, some similarity in my facial features. Perhaps she, too, will have squinting eyes that disappear in the light. Perhaps she will prefer looking down at the ground and her own feet as opposed to an open and never-ending sky. Signed, perhaps one day, a great-grandmother.
Catherine Cottle, reading from her book, I Remain Yours, Secret Mission Love Letters of My Mormon Great-Grandparents. A letter there written by Catherine to her departed great-grandparents. One of the most fascinating elements of this epistemological project. I wonder, Catherine, how it changed your relationship with these long-gone great-grandparents, people you never met in person, to strike up a correspondence. They're your pen pals.
Mm-hmm. That's the first time I've heard it worded like that, but that's really true. That's what happened, I think. And in becoming pen pals, I think, you know, on the page, we look very different, you know, and as you can tell, I kind of related a little bit more to my great-grandfather through the letters because of his love for the language and because he really took hold and his creativity poured through it. And initially, I thought, oh, we'll seem very different and I'll be able to contrast different issues over the last 120 years. And as I went through the letters and became a pen pal, I realized that there were so many similarities, I really could not deny it. And that became a thread throughout the letters as well as a thread that I saw in my children, especially regarding the inability for creativity to be suppressed in any way. You know, he's in a very restrictive environment, which you would imagine creativity, there would be very little room for that. And he finds ways to enhance that throughout his 2.5 years. Really, even when he doesn't want it to come out of him, it does. And you can see a lot of similarities between those years and my years in early motherhood, where there really is not the time or the space or the energy for creativity, and it still finds a way to come out.
Such a fascinating way to extrapolate from these old letters between your great-grandmother and your great-grandfather. The book again, I Remain Yours, Secret Mission Love Letters of My Mormon Great-Grandparents, the author Catherine Cottle. Catherine is here with us in studio. And, you know, it's interesting to read this book, and you've got these love letters. This is a form that is ostensibly the most confessional, intimate form of writing that there is. But your love letters to them are love letters of a different sort and somehow even more confessional and intimate than the conventional romantic love letters that, you know, young sweethearts send to each other. It's a different kind of love letter.
Yes. As I started working on the book, initially it was kind of just looking at their love relationship. But the more I got into it, the more I realized it really was not just about literal love. It was about, you know, metaphorical love for language, for family, for genealogy, for my future, and really at its base for language and the ability to tell stories and to pass them on, and that writing and love have this ability to go past the individual lifespan. There's not many other things out there that can do that.
Catherine Cottle, it really has been a pleasure talking with you, and congratulations on this book.
Thank you very much.
Catherine Cottle talking with Erin Hankin about her book, I Remain Yours, secret mission love letters of my Mormon great-grandparents. You can find out more at catherinecottle.com.